The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The bedtime struggle can be very real for parents, especially after a break in routine. You know, the Christmas break probably has got people up to 90, their sleep routine has changed, and now it's school time again, or whatever, creche time, and things are not going well. Joining me now, Lucy Wolfe, sleep consultant, author of the best-selling book, The Baby Sleep Solution. Lucy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, let's talk about how early you should start training your baby to sleep. I mean, are we talking about a month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months?
Well, I think that ultimately it's a good idea to begin to sleep shape your child's sleep from as early on as feels right for you. So, you know, there are small things that parents can do without putting themselves under too much pressure, because the early months are fueled with pressure and without worrying too much about sleep, you see. But it's a good time to get to know your baby, to learn a little bit about some of the small things around sleep that might help, such as learning to read the language of sleep and just understanding the difference between getting tired versus overtired, which often is represented by intense eye rubbing, big type yawning, and just purely getting to know each other on that basis, learning and helping your baby feel safe, loved, secure, and slowly introducing, you know, the idea of a bedtime routine and different processes and rituals that just really help create a level of safety in the context of their sleep, but without putting themselves under too much pressure.
Now, are babies in sync with mother's sleep routine initially, or, you know, at what point do they develop their own particular pattern?
So again, in the early months, your baby is obviously mom and baby are closely attuned, and that's why we're really involved in, you know, that interaction and communication between mom and baby. And in the beginning, like baby, although they're born with a circadian rhythm, it's not mature, but also they're not making the sleep hormone melatonin until they're a little bit older, you know, maybe about 8 weeks or so. So again, one of our tasks is to maybe help them regulate their circadian rhythm. And you'll know, and you know, you'll be have heard before about, you know, maybe having a regular wake time after the first couple of weeks, and just exposing baby to bright and natural light so that they avoid confusing day with night. And I would really encourage that from early on, because then you can start to create a level of predictability between, you know, waking, engagement, feeding, and preparing for sleep, and develop what I might describe as being a rhythm to the day, which then really underpins the baby's natural rhythm, which is completely a work in progress, but something that you can be harnessing from fairly early on.
Yeah. Now, can you train the baby's rhythm? Is that the idea? Or do some babies have completely their own way of doing things and there's nothing you can do about it?
Sure. And I suppose, you know, in the kind of context of sleep, you know, the word training can often feel and sounds completely negative or has negative connotations. So it may be better to think of it in terms of shaping your child's sleep and then in time helping them to learn, because we take the, you know, the kind of emotion out of it in that sense, because you are completely helping your baby, but you're trying to read their, you know, their needs and respond to them. So it doesn't feel like you're trying to shoehorn them into something, and you're developing a rhythm between you so that you're learning to read their cues for sleep as well as feeding, and you're really kind of harnessing their natural rhythm, and their overnight time sleep gradually starts to become more organized as your baby heads towards 12 to 16 weeks. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they start to sleep through the night, but what it does mean is that the potential for more consolidated sleep starts to emerge. But it's really important to mention that, you know, sleeping through the night is sort of a vague term as well. And what we're hoping for always is just to nourish and nurture your child's sleep profile at a rate and a pace that feels right for you based on your child's age, their stage, and the informed decisions that you're making.
Now, you know, you hear expressions like, oh, he was a very hungry baby, or she was a very hungry baby. And that the different demands. I mean, rest is needed, of course, for baby, but also they're hungry. So do you try to anticipate when they might get hungry and feed them in advance to get them settled quickly? Or do you wait for the squall?
Yeah, so I think that ultimately, you know, again, in the early months, I think one of the primary pieces is to try and, you know, get your feeding practice established. And that often is about learning to read their cues for feeding, as well as reading the cues for sleep, as I mentioned. And again, I use the word rhythm because it's not trying to be prescriptive, and it's really trying to honor what your child is communicating with you, that when they need a feed, if they're signaling that that's what they need, that you're able to respond to that, and equally you're able to respond when they're signaling that they may need to sleep. But sometimes the sleep piece gets a little bit lost because we're so bogged down in the feeding piece, and rightly so, because look, our children are completely dependent on us for their every need. But the need for sleep sometimes can get a little bit lost in translation because we wait for the late cues there. So you talk about, do you wait for the squawk for the feeding? But what sometimes parents are doing is they're waiting for the squawk for the sleeping, and the baby is showing us intense sleep symptoms, like eye rubbing, big type eye rub, big yawning, agitation, which often means the body now is being flooded with the stress hormone, cortisol and adrenaline, which leads to a resistance to sleep and leads to, sometimes disrupted sleep. So early, responding to both feeding and early response to sleep, early cues, brief eye rubs, brief yawns, moments of quiet can really help in that time that is often fraught with a lot of pressure in the first place anyway, Pat.
Now, you and I have spoken before about the sleep routine, and that could involve a bath, it could involve a story. It could involve moving to the bedroom in advance, pulling over the curtains, whatever it might be, turning down the lights. You establish a routine so baby knows, okay, it's not happening immediately, but I know I'm going to sleep.
Yeah, and it's lovely to develop a ritual. And I suppose it's about a messaging, this is what happens to me when it's time to sleep. And it doesn't need to be complicated or sophisticated. Ideally, though, it is logical and linear. So all routes lead to the transition from awake to asleep. And for parents, like, a bath is not a prerequisite, although lots of parents do. A bath is part of their bedtime routine. For me, I feel the important characteristics for the bedtime routine are, firstly, that we try to do it before baby is overtired or before the child is overtired. So we've talked about those cues. And then I like the idea that the bedtime routine itself happens in the bedroom that your child is going to sleep in, so they can develop that association with those steps that they're leading to sleep time, but they all happen in the bedroom. So maybe you go in, dim the lights, close the curtains, change the nappy into their little pajamas, into their sleeping bag if parents are using one. And then there's a gorgeous opportunity as part of your bedtime routine for connection, lots of eye contact, lots of dialogue. And I suppose I would anticipate that parents are chatting and singing to their children as they're getting them ready for bed, and that, the messaging becomes very predictable, that this is what happens to me. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean we have a gorgeous transition to sleep all of the time, resistance to sleep, bedtime battles, the need of lots to get them to go to sleep often play into the sleep narrative. But it's just about beginning to lay a foundation towards diminishing some of those vulnerabilities.
Some of the questions. I have a 3.5-year-old daughter who never sleeps before 10 or 11 o'clock. She was breastfed for 3 years and co-sleeps with me. She will go to bed but refuses to fall asleep until I am in bed with her. Please help me to break this cycle.
I know. And it can be so difficult, because all you are doing continuously is trying to do the best for your child in terms of meeting their needs. And then sometimes this sort of dynamic, not unusual for this age group to have a late onset of sleep. Contradictory, though, when we're trying to address this particular problem, it's a case of beginning, the process of bedtime and developing bedtime routines, deciding where you want your child to sleep, which room do you want them to sleep, what bed and where do you want them to sleep. And when you've made those decisions, then working towards establishing that. And if I have a child who's doing a really late onset of sleep, I start bedtime really early, which can be really contradictory. So I might be starting bedtime more like 6:30 and into bed by around 10 to 7 or so. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean this is the timing you'll always use. But what this timing can do, if we complement it with a wake time no later than 7:30 a.m., it can begin to establish what I might describe as being the natural bedtime, which is likely to range somewhere between 7 and 8 for a lot of children in this age profile. So if you can begin that, that begins to address the challenge that this mom is currently experiencing and work towards, an easier sleep, and then more sleep for that child too, because they can only do so much sleep and before they wake in the morning. And of course, we either wake them to regulate the body clock, or they need to be up, because they've woken themselves, or they need to go to daycare or school or whatever they're doing.
My 10-month-old still wakes regularly to breastfeed overnight. The waking is becoming more regular. I've tried weaning as per your book, but she just screams for more than 40 minutes. I'm back to work in a week and I really need her to sleep. Should we go cold turkey with the feeding during the night and stay and support her while she is crying? She's a very big, healthy baby and eating solids and taking milk during the day, so she doesn't need to feed during the night.
That's so once the parent has decided the child no longer needs nighttime feeding, a weaning can be introduced once it feels appropriate to everybody involved. I would never really do cold turkey because I think it's too abrupt. But what I sometimes find is that parents are trying to night wean, but they haven't maybe dealt with the key parts that stop their children from continuously sleeping throughout the course of the night. Now, we know they don't continuously sleep. They transition through sleep phases, but they are able to start to transition through those phases themselves, but they need the skill at bedtime. So sometimes, Pat, if the feed at bedtime is still quite close to sleep time, it means that the sleep ability, or as that's how I describe it, the sleep ability is on the lower end of the scale, which then in turn means that the need to feed back to sleep through the night continues even when parents try to stop doing that. So the key piece is to look at bedtime first and completely uncouple the feeding from sleep at bedtime specifically before we then begin the weaning. And again, from a weaning perspective, I would generally work towards regulating the nighttime feeding. She's used to feeding, so she's, you know, she's used to those calories. And it's a case of gently regulating that and then slowly reducing maybe the amount of time on the breast in this case, or the amount in the bottle. But without addressing bedtime itself, the overnight, I find, is too difficult to address.
Now, there's a disturbing one. I have a daughter who has not slept properly in the last year since a family member died. She's got very nervous at night and can't go to sleep unless my wife is with her. What can we do? She has done play therapy and was going okay for a week or so, but worse than ever now.
I know, it's so difficult. And, you know, I always say that sleep has so many force factors. You know, it has the emotional, the psychological, the behavioural, the environmental. And here we're here we're talking about this little person who has experienced grief. And as a result of that has, you know, that's played out in the context of her sleep. Parents have done, you know, really well to do a play therapy style, because that's really helpful to for a young child to help process their emotions. But what they might also need to now do is work towards helping her feel more safe and secure in the overall context of her sleep. And again, this can be done with those slightly earlier bedtimes by introducing the bedtime routine in her bedroom. And I always stay and I support them. But maybe instead of being in the bed with her, I might be alongside the bed. So I'm starting to create a level of independence, if you like, but I'm completely helping her to regulate with that. Sometimes we can, the emotional challenges completely overlap the behavioral sleep challenges, and it's trying to, you know, protect the child's own sense of self and, you know, well-being feelings, but also help her to feel safe and secure. And the stay and support approach, bookended by a lot of my recommendations, helps to promote and support that.
Well, Lucy, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today. Lucy Wolfe is author of the best-selling book, The Baby Sleep Solution. And thank you very much to Lucy.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.